In this episode of the Medicinal Herbs Podcast from Holistic Matters, naturopath and herbalist Joe Boyd joins us to talk about safe and effective herbal support for children. Pediatric patients struggle with both unique health challenges as well as some of the same issues adults struggle with. Joe importantly points out that for the most part, children are not mini adults, and herbal pediatrics do require a specific approach.
So today we're going to talk about children and herbal use. And a lot of times we find this topic kind of confusing and we're not really understanding exactly where to start. And so we're going to take time to really go through that and understand. So let's first welcome our guest, Joe Boyd, who is a naturopath in Australia, who's here again to talk to us about children and herbal use. Welcome, Joe.
Thanks so much for having me.
So maybe I think we should start with kind of grounding everyone in when we're talking about pediatric use, what is really that age range we're thinking about?
Oh, look, I think it's actually quite broader than what people think, and it spans quite a number of years in a child's life. So it's basically from birth until the age of 17 years. Some references may even say 21, 22 or 24 years, but it's broken down into categories. So, you know, we've got the neonates, so they're the babies. That's the first 28 days or 1 month of life, and this is where we see a lot of things like maybe colic and reflux and, of course, you know, cradle cap. And then we've got the infant. So that's 1 month to a year. We often see gut issues here, maybe skin challenges, perhaps sleep issues. And then we've got the delightful toddlers. So that's from 1 to 4 years of age. We see similar things to what we might see in the infants, but also we, you know, may see some ear infections or immune challenges. Some emotional stuff might be starting to come through for them, or perhaps food intolerances. Then we've got the child, which is age 5 to 12 years of age. And then we've got our adolescents. So that's pretty much 13 to 19. I've heard some people break it down to say, well, we've also got the tweens, which could be between the ages of 8 and 12. But, you know, at the end of the day, as I said, it covers quite a broad range of ages and also different challenges, potential challenges that we may see in these children or pediatrics.
I know we kind of in this group tonight band the span, you know, of children. I know you have little ones and I have an 18-year-old who definitely is still a child in many respects. Exactly. But other respects thinks he's a man. So that has its own set of challenges, right?
That's right.
So you know, as we think about kind of children across the board, we often, when we're thinking about herbs and utilizing them in children, we may get kind of an apprehension, like, is it safe? And what dose, if it is safe, should I use? And so maybe if we could just touch a little bit on that aspect, because I think that's a lot of times a barrier for us to move forward with using herbs in a pediatric patient.
And I think that's a great question, Sarah. And to be honest, I can understand that if people are not familiar with using herbs. Look, and they are absolutely safe when prescribed by a qualified healthcare professional, right? And, you know, children often respond really quickly to herbal medicines. Look, I think one reason why perhaps the challenge might seem daunting is that herbal pediatrics is something that is not often taught in colleges or at an undergraduate level. And there also seems to be quite a lack of postgraduate education as well. But if you think about it, herbs have this long history for helping children and their families to thrive and be healthy. And what I think is interesting is that, you know, many people, particularly in the Western world, consider natural therapies or alternative medicine as a deviation from the norm, when in fact they've been prescribed and practiced for thousands of years for health and well-being. And in fact, herbal healing is considered to be one of the earliest forms of healing. And I think in regards to herbal safety, I think in particular their gentle nature and their non-addictive properties really make them great herbs for pediatrics. But having said that, children are not just miniature adults, right? So, you know, a herbal treatment does require a specialized approach because their developing bodies can develop, you know, can respond differently in regards to absorption and metabolism of herbs. And they have different disease patterns, maybe different susceptibilities and responses compared to adults. So for us, there are some, I guess, broad guidelines that we can use in pediatrics. And most herbs at the end of the day are suitable for children, but it's really essential to be knowledgeable and informed. So use gentler herbs, for example, like chamomile in our young ones and in our infants. Dose appropriately. Things like powerful laxatives, of course, we're going to avoid those. Be, you know, cautious about strong tasting herbs like wormwood and ginger or potentially toxic herbs. So there are some guidelines that we do need to follow. But I really want to, reassure people and give them confidence in the fact that herbs can be incredibly valuable for children and navigating those safety concerns. And by following these basic rules and looking at people who are actually using herbs in clinic and know what they're doing can, you know, minimize those safety mishaps. Now, the second part of your question in regards to dosing, determining the correct dose at times can feel a little bit overwhelming, but it's one of those things that the more you do, the easier it becomes, of course. So that we have these guidelines in regards to infants, so babies up to the age of 2 years or 24 months. We use what's called Freed's rule, and this is where it's the age in months divided by 150, which will give us the fraction of the adult dose. And then we've got children from the ages of 2, typically to 12. So from 12 years and onwards, often we consider that to be safe to use adult dosing. But from 2 to 12, there's a rule that we can use that's based on body surface area, and it looks at that body surface curve. And it's called Augsburger's rule. And this is where what we do is we multiply 1.5 by the weight of the child. And I'm sorry, it's in kilograms. So in the US, obviously, you'll have to do that conversion from pounds to kilograms. Then plus 10 equals the percentage of the adult's dose. Now, if you don't remember that, all of this information is, of course, available online for you. And the beauty about children's dosing is often they require much, much lower doses than an adult dose. So you can get really comprehensive therapeutic doses that are achievable and, of course, affordable in our little ones.
So that's a great way to think about it. And I know we have some resources on Holistic Matters that kind of defines the different
wonderful.
You know, algorithms to help, you know, to understand, you know, those rules. So if you forget, you can do that and do those easy pounds to kilogram conversions.
Great.
So we talked, you know, about safety, and we know that children are not little adults, so they need their own kind of specific dosing. But then also their taste buds are different, right? They're developing and they tend to be more sensitive. And so because of that, sometimes they may be more likely to say that they don't like something, or they yucky often is a word that I think little kids yelling at you if they don't like something. So how can we overcome kind of that potential yucky challenge? This probably applies to some picky adults too, who haven't improved their bitter senses yet. So how would you address that challenge? Yeah.
And I think that's a great point that you make in regards to the little ones saying, ooh, yucky, and not liking the taste of things. My little boy's almost 3 now, and all of a sudden I'm hearing that a lot. And look, I think it's fair that we do have those concerns in regards to whether children are going to actually take the herbs, because at the end of the day, not everybody's as enthusiastic about taking herbs as perhaps we are. And I think we need to be really mindful of that. And firstly, I think sometimes the challenge can actually come from the parents, and they perhaps may be that barrier. So in that scenario, we can work with changing their mindset and making it a really positive experience for both the children and the parents. But it also can depend on what the kids have been exposed to as well. I remember growing up, I used to have you know, my mum used to give me a teaspoon of cod liver oil after dinner. And if we were sick, she used to cut up garlic and put it with butter, and we used to eat it on toast. And that was all quite normal for us. So our taste buds had actually, you know, acclimated to those various types of taste. Unfortunately, children nowadays, if you have a look at all of the different types of medicines that are available for kids, they're, pardon the pun, but they're sickly sweet, aren't they? They're strawberry, banana flavored, cherry flavored. So I think for some adults, as you mentioned, taste can be a problem for adults and children. It's because we're used to medicines being super sweet. So I think some really simple things that we can do is engage kids in their health and in taking the herbal medicines. It might be that you give the herbal medicines for the young ones creative names. So at home we have what's called a Bee Calm tonic, which is B-double-E. So I've got a little B on the label. And my little one, my little toddler who's really wants to be independent, I'll actually put the dose on a teaspoon and he'll add it to his yogurt or his apple sauce. And he also gets echinacea, you know, most days. And I say it makes you strong like a rhinoceros because he loves rhinoceroses. And I put that in yogurt for him to, you know, help to mask that taste. And I'll ask him, I'll say, what did mummy put in your yogurt? And he'll say, echinacea. So I think if we can engage them and be a bit creative in that way, and if we come back to the dosing, often they're using really small doses, so it can be easily disguised in perhaps applesauce or apple juice. You could add it to honey. I really like Manuka honey because you've got the additional therapeutic benefits of that particular honey. You could make natural jello shots. So what you do is make up the jello, put it in ice cube trays, and then put the little dose, which sometimes is even a couple of drops, the dose of the herb in each cube, and the child gets that each day. I make natural gummy bears at home, which I use gelatin, flavor it with organic bilberry juice, and I add the herbs to that. And other things you can do is popsicles, or add a little bit of licorice to the mix as well. I know some people use smoothies. And if you are putting it in a juice or you're putting it in a smoothie, make sure that you put it in a small amount of liquid, because you really want to make sure that the children are actually getting that therapeutic dose. And then, of course, there are herbal tablet options that may work better for, you know, children that can actually swallow tablets. And in some situations, you can actually crush those tablets and add them to, you know, yogurt or applesauce, or even I tend to add them to nut butters. We've got here in Australia a great nut butter that's called an ABC spread. And I believe those three nuts together actually make a perfect protein. So if you get the nut butter and grind up the tablets, I think it's a good way to disguise the taste. So really it's all about experimenting, being creative, but I do recommend you taste the herbs themselves as well, because at the end of the day, andrographis is always going to taste like andrographis, and at times can be really difficult to disguise. So taste it yourself and just play with ways in which your children may accept or be able to manage taking those herbs.
I think those are really good ways to think about it. And I think you got to individualize because each child is so different, right?
Yes.
And
every day could be different as well, couldn't it? Yeah, one day they might like have it in yogurt. The other day they might think that's yucky.
Right. So you just have to be patient and experimentative, right?
Yes, so. Correct.
So often we find, especially when our little ones are in daycare or starting school, that it seems like they are perpetually ill and their immune system are overwhelmed by kind of like the new exposures. So what type of herbal offerings do we have to really support that overall child, which then also supports the parent? Because I know when I had a little one at home, I often got more sick than I probably had otherwise. So we want to support both the parent and the child by supporting the child's well-being.
I think that's great, Sarah, that you mentioned the parents. And I always say, don't forget the parents with, you know, immune system health and stress, etc. Always support the parents as well. And look, I've become one of those parents where if one of my children gets the dreaded sniffles, or perhaps there's an eerie silence in the afternoon, or perhaps they're crying in the middle of the night, I almost start to panic, thinking, oh my goodness, is this the start of something? And when we think about, you know, coming back to the little ones, their immune systems are developing, and it starts early in fetal life. So although, you know, as babies, we inherit sort of a strong head start from maternal antibodies in utero, once they emerge from the protection of their gorgeous, comfy in utero home, their immune systems are immature and vulnerable, and of course lack antigenic experience. And in regards to innate immunity, how that develops when they're little is of course by various exposures in the environment. And I think here comes into play that whole hygiene hypothesis. So if we think about how our immune system is trained by being exposed to new things, and that's how it recognizes what's dangerous and what's not, then living in a highly sterilized society probably isn't good for our little one's immune system. So I think first and foremost, let them play, let them get out in nature, let them play in the dirt, let them roll in the mud, and basically let them get dirty, because that really helps to, I guess, educate their immune system. And it's actually considered the norm in regards to childcare for children to have 6 to 12 colds per year, which is huge. That could be meaning every single month your child's going to get sick, because they play hard, don't they? And there's no such thing as personal boundaries with children. So they're always up in each other's faces with various coloured snot. But that is part of building their immune system as well. And I think we have to remind ourselves that. And in regards to herbs, my two key herbs for immune health, and they're probably herbs that the listeners are familiar with, is Echinacea and Andrographis. So my absolute favourite for overall immune health with both paediatrics and adults is Echinacea, which has a whole host of traditional use and modern evidence for its efficacy in being an immune modulator. We often hear people say that don't take Echinacea all the time. It stimulates the immune system. It'll wear out the immune system. And that's just not how it works. It supports and modulates immune system function and basically primes it to do the job it's meant to do. So I think Echinacea really does shine as a preventative. However, there's also been studies to show that it's effective in acute situations as well. And all you need to do is increase that dose. So a typical dose may be you take one dose a day, and then in a short-term situation, you can certainly increase that to three or four doses a day, depending on, of course, the weight of the child and how you're dosing them. But being working as a preventative, and I really think minimizing the chances for illness in this age group is just as important as having herbs on hand to deal with a virus or a bacteria infection as it presents. And a lot of parents say that when they take Echinacea or their children take Echinacea, not only does it reduce them getting illnesses, but it also reduces the severity and the duration of the illness as well. So I think it's really important that we are taking Echinacea on a daily basis, particularly during those winter months when the children are at childcare or school, to really support immune health. And it's really important in regards to Echinacea to make sure we're using the right Echinacea, the right species. So Angustifolia and Purpurea are what we want to look for. We want to make sure that we're using the root of Echinacea, because that's where those important alkylamides or active constituents that give you that tingling on the tongue sensation, that's where they lie, in the root of those two particular species. Now, you can also get Echinacea as a glycytract. There's a couple of herbs that I use as glycytracts, but for the most part, the ethanol extracts are going to extract those all-important active constituents much, much better. So for a glycytract, I may use an Echinacea glycytract, but you do need to use it more often. And what I sometimes do is I'll actually add a blend of Echinacea, Angustifolia and Purpurea ethanol extract to that glycytract. And the only other herbs that I ever use as a glycytract is, in fact, marshmallow. And then we have andrographis, which is a wonderful Ayurvedic herb, and it really puts the brakes on an infection once it takes hold. And there have been studies done on children for andrographis, and it's been shown to reduce the severity of the signs and symptoms, as well as the duration of colds and flus. And they've seen symptom improvement by as early as day two. Now, the challenge with andrographis is that taste can be a little bit of a barrier. It's referred to as the king of bitters. So in regards to it being the king of bitters, means that not only is it bitter tasting, but it's very cooling for the body. So that can be really good for fever management and bring down a fever. But it also, in regards to that bitter taste, mean it may be difficult to disguise in a yogurt or an apple sauce. So often if children will swallow tablets, I will actually use the tablets. And then in relation to the fever support, we can drink things like what we call a YEP tea. So YEP is Y-E-P. YEP tea is basically yarrow, elderflower and peppermint. And this can really help with that whole diaphoretic activity. So in doing that, if we drink it as a warm tea, because that's really important to promote that diaphoresis, it can be used to encourage a healthy sweat, to fight infection, eliminate toxins. And of course, when we're sweating, we're also reducing body temperature. So in regards to diaphoretics, don't be afraid of them. We can also use them to ward off colds as well. So if you feel a cold coming on, drink some YEP tea. And I think with fevers, of course, we need to say, be very mindful, but not fearful. And then we've got some great herbs to help with coughs as well. Look, this is probably a topic of immune health I could talk about all day in regards to both children and adults. But for a dry cough, and I'll be quick about this because I know we've only got a certain amount of time today. But for a dry cough, I use a combination of marshmallow glycitrate and I use a high-grade licorice. So I do 80 ml of marshmallow glycitrate and 20 ml of licorice. And that's a really simple combination to help a dry cough and really help to moisten and soothe the mucous membranes. And then if we've got a wet cough, we want to use our expectorants because they help to sort of loosen up that mucus so we can expectorate them or get rid of them from the lungs. And herbs like eyebright, once again, licorice is really effective, and golden seal. But the golden seal, like andrographis, is always going to taste like golden seal, and it has quite a strong taste. So there are lots of things in our herbal toolkit to support immune challenges. But at the end of the day, a kid's going to get sick? Absolutely. Are we going to get sick? Absolutely. But I think with the support of herbs and, of course, diet and lifestyle and so forth, we can perhaps lessen how often we get sick and certainly reduce those signs and symptoms and duration. And for me, I do keep reminding myself that illness, in fact, is a great teacher for our children's immune systems.
Well, this goes to my next topic, because the talk about children being ill has always made me a little stressed out. And so stress is something that adults experience because maybe their children are sick and they're trying to juggle their jobs and all these other things. But we hear more and more about children being stressed. And I know, having just had a son go through the college application process, those, teenage kind of upper into university years can be super stressful for kids. So what are some of the things that we could think about to help children and especially adolescents probably manage some of those stress?
Oh, look, and that's a good point. Stress is universal, isn't it? And who'd want to go back to those teenage years? I just wish your son all the best to navigate all of that. And they do. If you think about them, and it's from our little ones right through to the adolescents, they undergo this incredible physical, mental and social growth. So that can be incredibly taxing on the body. And it makes them really sensitive to external influences. And some pediatrics will be able to deal with that better than others, of course. And I think when they are under stress, this is when we're likely to see things like negative moods, difficulty with self-regulation, which can, of course, affect attention and behaviour. It can affect sleep. And also, I think particularly with the adolescents, and sorry to say this, Sarah, but, they can engage in certain risk-taking behaviours as well. So we've got... And this is another situation where, as you said, we need to work with the adults as well and support the adults. So with our little ones, a chamomile really is the quintessential young ones pediatric herb that can be applied externally, internally. You can use it as a tea or as an extract. And it's got a long history of use in folk medicine, particularly for whining and irritated infants. Of course, we do see whining and irritated adolescents as well. But if you think about that whole tale of Peter Rabbit, when he used to have these frightening adventures out in Mr. McGregor's garden, his mother would always put him to bed with a lovely cup of chamomile tea. So it's a great herb. I do tend to use it more for the young ones, I have to say. For crankiness and restlessness, it has lovely carminative properties. And it's great for teething and sleep and topically for itching skin. But it's also a wonderful carminative for the tummy as well. So for nervous tummies that little ones may experience, but also adolescents can experience that nervous tummy as well, chamomile is a lovely choice. And it may be as simple as having chamomile tea. Also for colicky babies, I think it's a great combination with caraway seeds, fennel seeds and dill to make up a sort of a gripe water to really help calm their stomachs, but it also helps to calm their nervous system as well. And if you have a look at a lot of these gripe waters, they're riddled with sugar. So I think, you know, if we can make our own, you know, that always works much, much better. And then I think if we are looking at our adolescents, herbs like skullcap and ashwagandha are two of my favourites. So skullcap is one of the best nerving tonics, and it's great for mental and physical tension and also calming pediatrics, but adults as well, calming those who are really wound up. So for those tired and wired moments, I think when we're beyond exhausted, perhaps we're grumpy, we're feeling overstimulated or very quick to anger, skullcap is a great one. And it's also said to be particularly effective for relieving any type of fear associated with test taking. So that's a good one for, you know, the adolescent age when they do have a lot of pressure, don't they? And I'm sure your son's experienced this in regards to taking tests or exams. I often will combine equal parts of skullcap and ashwagandha for a variety of pediatric challenges. And in regards to ashwagandha, it's been used in Ayurvedic traditions for, gosh, I think it must be over 4,000 years. And if you have a think about the Latin name, which is Withania somnifera, that actually alludes to that beautiful sedative nature of the herb. And somnifera actually said or translates to induces sleep. So the wonderful thing about ashwagandha is, unlike most other adaptogenic herbs, it's actually slightly sedative rather than stimulating. So being that calming adaptogen, it's got a whole host of uses and a long list of uses for pediatric health, for things like children who are exhausted from stress, who have anxieties, maybe who complain of body aches. And particularly if you think about the rate in which children grow for perhaps the first couple years of life and then their teenage years, their bodies are growing at such an incredible rate. It's no wonder they get these, general body aches. And for children who get sick easily, who have trouble sleeping, ashwagandha also said to improve memory and mental clarity. So it'd be a great combination with Bacopa for exam times, and also skullcap if they do have any type of stress associated with exams. And also traditionally, ashwagandha was used for children who fail to thrive. And I've seen this in little ones, in infants, and it can be highly, highly stressful for the parents. And then with ashwagandha, it's also one of the key herbs for convalescents. So coming back to immune health, right, and the fact that, you know, childcare, children who are in childcare or school, you know, they often get sick and we need them to get better and get back to childcare or school so we can then get back to work. I think we do sometimes are a little bit remiss in regards to placing value on their convalescence. So ashwagandha is a beautiful herb for that. And then, you know, finally, I think I have to mention kava for the older ones. So we say that kava is best used for children or pediatrics from 12 onwards, used with caution for under 12, or I think some literature said it's actually contraindicated for children under 12. But for our adolescents and our teenagers, it's the best herb for anxiety. Also for the parents as well. Don't forget about kava for the parents. I think our society seems to be so steeped in anxiety, and it's one of the most common mental health problems, I think, around the globe. And I believe in the US, I was reading a statistic a little while ago in regards to anxiety in teenagers and young adults in the US, and it was said to be something like 25%. Of teenagers aged, I think it was 13 to 18, will suffer from some type of anxiety. So that's a quarter of all teenagers. So kava in that situation, you know, it can work quickly. I know a lot of people who, you know, will chew on kava tablets, and they say it really helps to ground them mentally and physically, and it can do so within half an hour or an hour. And I think, you know, once again, it's important to remember the parents as well, because parenting is hard, as we know, and parenting an anxious child can certainly add an extra layer of stress. So the great news is that these herbs are not just for pediatrics, they're for absolutely everybody.
I know as a parent, kava has helped me out multiple times, especially at late at night, you know, when you're thinking yes. about where are they and why are they 10 minutes past their curfew, or maybe longer than that, and you're ready to strangle
absolutely.
Them.
I'm not there yet, Sarah, no. Give me another 16 years and I'll be in that situation.
It will fly by just like that, so...
That's what I've heard.
So, you know, stress is one thing, but stress also leads to this next topic. So when we're stressed, we don't sleep well. When we don't sleep well, we have a poor immune response, and then we become more stressed. And so how do we think about sleep? Because, I mean, we've all had those sleepless nights with a child or ourselves too, but we definitely find that sleep can be a challenge for some children. So how would you address sleep in those kind of all ages across the board?
Look, all of the herbs that I've just mentioned, of course, are going to be really effective for sleep. And in regards to kava, often, you know, I'll get teenagers in particular to have it just before going to bed, say half an hour before going to bed, and make sure you're using a water-extracted kava with kava lactone, so containing that active constituent kava lactone. So I may get them to have one, maybe two tablets before bed, half an hour before bed. And then if I find an hour later they're still not getting to sleep, maybe they can have another tablet. And I often get them to actually have a bottle of kava perhaps by the bed, and if they wake up during the night, you know, we can give them another dose of kava. And there are a couple of other herbs that are really quite specific for sleep challenges, and that's valerian and passion flower. So with valerian, I think it's many herbalists' favourite go-to for sleep, and it's a great relaxant. It has mild sedative properties, and it's a great and effective sleep aid. And in fact, it's been used as a sleep aid for thousands of years. And it's said to be effective for quietening and soothing upon both the brain and nervous system. So I think this is a great consideration for those people that have the busy minds and perhaps can't get to sleep. And it's a great one for sort of soothing those frayed nerves and that tension. It's also really good as a muscle relaxant as well. So if you're really pent up when you're going to bed and you're suffering or you're storing tension in your muscles as well, valerian is excellent. Valerian, if you read some of the research, it does seem to take a little while to have an effect. So it's not a tablet that perhaps you take at night and it's going to work right on the spot then and there. Of course, for some people it does, but often I do combine it with other herbs because it can take a little bit of time to work up in the body and help with sleep. Quite a bit of research has been done to show that valerian is really effective when combined with passion flower, and the researchers showed that it's helped with the amount of time it takes us to get to sleep, the amount of time that we're perhaps awake during the night, and also the overall quality of the sleep. Now with valerian, often I do use it in a tablet form, as I said, in combination with other herbs, because it's not necessarily the taste of valerian that's a problem, although it does have a very, I like to call it an earthy taste. It stinks. I don't know if you've ever smelled valerian, but there's this joke amongst herbalists that it smells like dirty socks. And cats love it. I don't know if you've noticed this for any of the listeners who have used valerian and have a cat, but they love it. It's like catnip for them. And I remember once having a mix of valerian and other herbs in liquid form on my countertop, and my cat went absolutely crazy for it. So there's something in that smell that's like catnip for them. And apparently, you know, the tale of the Pied Piper, who was used to remove rats during the plague, and apparently he played his pipe and all of the rats followed him. Well, the theory is, in fact, he'd stuffed his pockets full of valerian root, and that's what the rats were attracted to. So a little bit of interesting, I guess, history for the listeners. With a passion flower, it's a wonderful herb to help to soothe agitation and nervousness. It's said to be effective, once again, for irritations of the brain. So when I read that, I translate that to, you know, people who perhaps have those busy minds, who have that circular thinking and trouble winding down at night and getting to sleep. So it's great for, you know, those people who have trouble sort of shutting off the brain. And for children, it's said to be very effective for that nervous type of restlessness that they can get, and sleeplessness, and also anxiety and nervous irritability. The beauty of the herbs that we've talked about today in relation to sleep is that you can take them throughout the day to help with stress, to prevent that stress buildup that we often get by the end of the day that can impact our sleep, and we can take them safely without them impairing our cognitive function and our ability to do what we need to achieve throughout the day. And of course, I have to mention, we need to ensure that we have good sleep hygiene as well. So all of those straightforward things that we should be doing, turning off technology an hour before bed, perhaps listening to some relaxation music, having a cup of chamomile tea, all of those things that we need to do to ensure that not only that we can get to sleep, that we have a good quality sleep as well.
You know, I think all of those things, you know, really help to round out sleep. And of course, sleep and stress are arm in arm. And I think of, you know, as you talk about chamomile tea, and Angela always says chamomile is like a mother's hug. And so it's a good way to kind of ease yourself into sleep. Yeah. And what child doesn't love that? So
exactly.
As we come to the end of our discussion today, what would be some of those final advice that you would give to our practitioners that are listening?
Oh gosh, time goes quickly, doesn't it? This is certainly a topic I could talk about all day, and there's so much else I'd love to chat about. But look, I guess my final words or pieces of advice would be, if you are working with children, create a fun space for them to begin with. Make them feel interested and comfortable so that they can open up to you and talk to you. And that's children of all ages. And there's challenges with communicating with pediatrics of all ages, isn't there? And I think get the parents and the children on board and engaged with taking herbs. And I think that this is something I do a lot with my adult patients, but there's no reason why you can't do it with the pediatrics as well, particularly if you can reason with the adolescents, is to say, look, let's just try it. Let's just try it for 10 days or 2 weeks. And if you're still having trouble with taking the herbs in this form, then let's look at an alternative. And what I find is, once they get over that initial taste of the herbs and they start to feel better, then it just becomes something that perhaps they're never going to love taking. But they just accept that, okay, this is going to maybe taste not that great for a couple of seconds, and then I'm going to feel okay. And look, I forgot to mention, when we're talking about getting children to take herbs, is when you take them, always, have a glass of water afterwards if need be to get that, remove that lingering, any potential lingering taste out of your mouth. And I think, don't overcomplicate treatment protocols with little ones. Keep it really simple. Don't try to do absolutely everything in that initial consultation or that initial visit. and be informed. Remember, they're not mini adults when it comes to herbs and dosing. And I think it's also really good to find a mentor to talk through cases with and also learn from. And at the end of the day, enjoy it, because treating children can be challenging, but also incredibly rewarding, and really can be the highlight of your day.
Thank you so much. I know as a parent, you know, all those things are so important, kind of finding that space for them and getting the parent involved. So I think that's just amazing advice as we think about treating those smaller people in our lives and making sure that they have the right dosing, the safe amount, and doing it in a way that they will embrace. So Jo, thanks again for
being Sarah.
On our podcast. We really appreciate it. All right. We'll talk to you later. Thank you so much.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Holistic Matters podcast. For more education on botanicals, as well as children's health, visit holisticmatters.com. That's holistic with a W.